Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and assistant editor Lee Boyce today is Jesse McClure and editor Simon Lambert. And coming up, as you can probably already tell, this is going to be a rather special podcast. Simon has not been demoted, perhaps maybe just for one day, because you see, in this episode, we're going to teach you how to never go broke and make money out of just about anything. Why, you ask? Because Lee has literally written the book about it. Alongside TV resale king Jesse McClure, who's joining us from LA. Has this podcast ever been more glam? They are the modern day money men, according to the blurb, and they're going to teach us how to build up a cash pot, learn our resale blueprint, and invest the pot for resale profits. Don't forget to stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, Lee, Jesse, congratulations. Lee, give us the minute sales pitch to whet our appetite properly.
Oh, God, it's so difficult, Georgie, isn't it?
You're using up your seconds. Come on. Yeah.
Come off it. Now, look, this book is not a get-rich-quick book, right? We're not going to make you millionaires overnight with this book. What this book is all about is little wins, little things you can do to make money and to make sure that you never go broke, hence the title. Now, what we do in this book is split into three parts. And part one is all about making a free cash pot. So if you visualize having a piggy bank with nothing in it, and then you go around your home, you look for ingenious ways to kind of fill up the coffers, make that piggy bank get fat. You then use that piggy bank to go into step two, which is where Jesse largely unloads lots of his secrets, lots of his tips. You know, he's a professional resale person. That's what he's done his whole entire life. You know, his job is to do that, buying and selling. That is what he does. So he lays this all out, all of the things you can do with that money, that pot of cash that you've built up in part one, that you're going to then use in part three, which is all of the practical places where you can take your piggy bank, your pot of cash that you've made from nowhere, and then reinvest it for bigger gains. That could be at places like car boots, charity shops, it could be online. There's loads of untapped markets, lots of things you can do with that money in order to make that pot grow even further. And that is the whole concept of the book.
Wasn't a minute though, Lee, was it? But that was very good. That was the Essex minute pitch. I wonder what the LA minute pitch is like. Go on, Jesse.
Yeah, I'll make you a ton of money. That's my summary. You read the book and I'll make you money. That's what it comes down to. So if you want the surfacey version of it, is we want to make and teach people how to make money and how to find value in things that they normally wouldn't think otherwise. That's really the key when it comes down to that. I've been doing this my entire life, really, since I was six. It's one of those things where it doesn't matter if you're in LA or London, South End or otherwise, it's about identifying your opportunities and seeing what money there is to be made out there. There's this misconception, I think, with a lot of people when they pick up a finance book, a business book, a money-making book, that it's about investing into your portfolio and how to diversify into T-bonds and ETFs and long-term tech blue chip stocks. When in reality, as we know, most people don't have an investment account. They don't invest in their retirement. We try to identify new ways of making money through unconventional means. So that's the most important thing for us that we try to do, is teach the people out there who aren't necessarily knee deep into these big complicated financial investments. I mean, say there's other ways to make money, and it's not just feel good fluff of what you think about, you bring about, dream big and you'll accomplish it. It's literally go to the car boot, do X number of things, and you'll come home with an extra $5 in profit that you can spend on a stock, you can buy yourself a beer with, or otherwise. But in summary, it's basically about teaching you how to make one more quid, if not a little bit more, every single day. That's it.
Excellent. We'll get much more into that in a minute, but I hope you don't mind, Jesse. Look, Lee's told me about the famous Stevenage story, I think, where you got identified, a bit of a celebrity spot a couple of times in Greggs. You are a bit of a celebrity, but I'm afraid on this podcast, it is Lee who's the celebrity. And some people may not know who you are, Jesse. So, you know, why should we believe that you won't allow us to go broke? What are your credentials? We know you're the TV resale king, but what does that mean? Give us a bit of a background. I don't want your resume or anything, but you know, just a little taster.
I didn't realize this was a job interview, but shoot, yeah, basically. I love talking.
We all know. Are you? Do you have the credentials?
Oh yeah.
Money podcast, right?
That's all I want. Absolutely. Of course, I have the credentials. I'll do anything to hype myself up and tickle my ego a little bit more. So, I've been in buying and selling since I was 6 years old. I've done over $1 million in eBay sales. I've done millions of dollars in antique sales. I have 3 TV shows about buying and selling. I don't know. You can look around my house and see what I got going on. Let's see. That's a crypto rig for mining Ethereum. That's a share blackjack table from the MGM that I'm reselling for $1,000. Got about, I got about $3,000 of Lego that I get, vintage Lego that I go through today that's selling to a collector. I don't know. I got a call with an auctioneer.
We've got a lot to dig into here, haven't we?
I don't know. Pick something, really. It's really what it comes down to. But I think the thing about it is I've bought and sold and started every kind of business under the sun. And I think it's one of those things, not just in buying and finance and resale, but really I hope people can extract those lessons that I've learned, good and bad, to try to pave their own way into their own resale game and money-making game. So that's where it really comes down to for me.
I'm going to chip in here, Georgie, as well, and say that Jesse is underselling himself a bit here because his parents run one of the oldest antique stores in Los Angeles where, you know, largely learned a lot of his trade and, of course, was probably the standout star of Storage Hunters, which a program that was sort of massive, massive hit, especially in the UK. And some of those wins, you know, there were losses in there, Jesse, weren't there? But we talk about this quite a lot in the book. You know, for example, he bid on a container and made $42,000 of profit on the container after blind bidding on it. And people will ask him, you know, was Storage Hunters real or was it just, you know, entertainment television? You know, Jesse will tell you that his money was on the line and not every single thing was a home run and not every single thing was a win, but he kind of calculated the risk and he had little things, nuances that he would see in a storage container, for example. If people don't know what I'm talking about here, the program was based around people blind bidding on these containers, which had sort of been fallen into arrears, so were being bid off, and you're not allowed to look around them, so you don't know what's in there, but you can have a little bit of time to have a look from the outside, bid on it or not, and then make money on it. And a couple of things that he found in there worth a lot of money, and he's used that kind of experience in his other resale life, which we outline in the book, and it's full of stories like this, Georgie. When I was talking to Jesse doing this book, largely we written this book over Zoom over the last year, which has been a challenge in itself, and it's been interesting. You know, Jesse's out in LA, I'm here in England. But Jesse would just tell me stories when we weren't even, you know, doing stuff for the book, and I was like, Jesse, that story needs to go in the book, you know, because what Jesse thinks it isn't a story is a great story. And we don't just tell these stories for story's sake. We tell these stories because you can learn from them. There are things that you can take from these stories into everyday life and everyday opportunities to buy and sell. And I'll go back to something Jesse said just then. The book is, it's not about long-term investing. It's not about pensions. It's not about really the core personal finance things that we talk about on this podcast all the time and bread and butter stuff for This Is Money and for me. This is more about what can a typical person do on the street, pick up this book, what can they sell from their home right away? What can they do online to make a little bit of money? How can they recycle for a little bit of money? How can they do this, that, and the other? Make this pot of cash quite simply, and then go out and kind of get involved in this resale game, whether that is just as a hobby, whether if that's a way just to get by, maybe trying to make 20, 30, 40 quid a day or whatever, doing these kind of things, or if it's, you know, sets the foundations of becoming a professional like Jesse, we've kind of got all of those avenues covered. And Jesse, all the credentials he has are huge in this because, yes, he's dealt with millions of dollars worth of gear over his time. He's talking about Lego he's got there worth a few grand, this, that, and the other. He sort of lays it out to the common man, and people can replicate this in Britain. And it's jam-packed full of tips and tricks.
Well, we won't give all away. We'll have a couple of those stories, if that's all right. But we do want to give some practical tips and advice and get us all started. But I want to know, I remember many years ago on the pod, you talking about Jesse. This is a long relationship, isn't it? But Why? What was the process of writing the book? Why did you decide that you were going to do it?
Oh, you're right, Georgie. Jesse and I go back quite a long way now. Back in the day on This Is Money, I had a series called A Coffee With, and I sort of interviewed people who I thought were interesting. I'd approach them, we'd go for a coffee, have a little chat, and I'd turn that into a story. Jesse actually contacted me after, do you remember all of the note nonsense that went on? So when the £5 note launched with Churchill on it, the polymer note, I did this story where I said, if you get an AA01 note, look out for these AA01 notes, because they were selling on eBay for big money. I was the first person that kind of realized this, did a story about it. It went cataclysmic. It went huge. It was a massive story, millions of hits, copied all sorts of other media outlets. It was huge. Jesse got in touch with me on the back of that story because he was going, he just filmed a TV show that was coming out in Britain. And he'd went to the Bank of England charity auction that I caught wind of was going on. Jesse went and bid in that auction. The lowest note available was AA01, quadruple 017. That was the lowest note available to the public. So number 17. The first note goes to the Queen. A couple of other notes go to Bank of England stuff, all that kind of stuff. Jesse basically got a bit outbid on that first note and was like, he was out of it. It went for something like just over four grand that note went for a £5 note. Jesse hung around, he got note number 20 and he paid £1,200 for it. And I did a story off the back of it. Jesse told of his experiences of being this American dude going to sort of Bank of England auction, you know, stepping on people's toes, all of that kind of stuff. And he ended up buying a couple of other £5 notes as well. But that number 20 note, Jesse made a gamble on that day. He took a calculated risk for a number of reasons, which we talk about in the book. But, you know, Churchill, for one, is an incredibly popular character, you know, pretty much everywhere, but especially so in America. Now, if Jesse takes that note to America, there's not going to be very many low serial, brand new £5 notes out there. So he kind of knows that. He's kind of taken that sort of risk. He knows that other auctions in recent times of rare old banknotes are going for big money. So if he got that note, sat on it, sold it in 20, 30 years, perhaps it would make a big profit. But it was such a fad. It was such a hot market. And we talk about this in the book, having contacts and marketing your items is key. Jesse already kind of had contacts in the field for this, and he had a seller, a buyer in mind. So, you know, buys his banknote for £1,200 and he quickly flips it for £4,000. I mean, that's the kind of high risk gamble. This is not something that we say in the book is easy to replicate, but we do talk a lot about how to win at auctions, what kind of attitude you should take to auctions, all of that kind of stuff. But that's how Jesse and I first met. And then the second time I met Jesse, I actually went to his flat in London and he'd bought a pallet of old world coins that had been rejected from machines. And Jesse was cleaning them all up and he was literally digging for gold. And he flipped a profit on this bathtub of old coins that we went through. But again, this is another touching point in part two of the book. It's all about valuing your time. So while he made a profit on this big pile of coins, it obviously took time to clean up the coins. A lot of them were old euros that had been thrown into fountains, for example, and Jesse had to sort of painstakingly clean each one in a solution. And then what happened then, Jesse? You went to France, didn't you, with those euros?
Yeah, I put them all in a backpack and I took train, and I found out that at train stations, I probably shouldn't do this because I'm incriminating myself. I jumped from train station to train station and I found out if you put them in a vending machine and then hit the reject button, it spits out all new coins. So I would jump from machine to machine, put in like 12 quid. I'd buy a hand sanitizer or M&Ms for a euro or 50 euro, hit the reject button, it spit out 9 euros. And then I just move on to the next train station until I had about 200. I was literally laundering money in the most literal sense. I hate talking about some stuff.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm sure they've forgotten about that. However, a few things are throwing up here. To be successful in what you do, Jesse, and I mean, you need to be knowledgeable. I mean, who thinks about the £5 note? It seems quite niche. But also, you've sort of got that, dare I say, LA chutzpah about you. What if perhaps you're the normal kind of Brit that isn't quite so ballsy and doesn't like putting dodgy coins in, you know, vending machines and the like. How can we do this?
So it's actually a misconception, right, about being having to be knowledgeable and to get into the stuff. Truly. And that's what really the framework of this book is, that anyone can pick it up. When I originally pitched this to Lee, it was a moment for me where I said, if I had a willing and able-bodied person that was, say, homeless and on the street, and I handed them the book, that they'd be able to find a way and use a skill set to get a hotel room and a hot meal for the night. That was the one core concept. So there's not this prerequisites of having to get a degree or otherwise just to know this, or having years of resale knowledge. What you're trying to do is just one thing, and that's identify value. And as long as you identify, and this sounds cheesy, but it's true, as long as you identify value in yourself, identifying value elsewhere is the easiest thing you can possibly do. So it's just a matter of how much effort you want to put into something. And so going back and using a real world example, when I started out doing video games. That was my first thing that I bought and sold. And it wasn't because I was a video game connoisseur, it's because I loved video games. And I was also 12 years old, but still, you get the core concept of the matter. The thing was that if I succeeded, happy days for me, I'd make a profit and I'd carry on. If I failed, at the bare minimum, I'd be stuck with a lot of video games and I'd be happy and I'd be playing video games. So it's not necessarily that you have to get into video games, more so than the idea is that you want to get into something that you already have a passion for, and making money is completely secondary. And so when you start getting those wins, whether it's a quid or 1,000 or 10,000 quid, is that either way you're going to come out ahead, whether it's value in the item that you cherish yourself, or the value in the item via a profit of buying and selling. So you're kind of taking away, and what I emphasize with Lee so much is risk aversion, is that if you mitigate risk as much as possible, that you're going to be always in the best chance of success. That's how I kind of see it. So, and that's, again, it's one of those things where you take a step back and say, why aren't people investing into their retirement accounts and pensions like Lee says? It's because you have to have that knowledge of what's the right thing to invest in, what's the long-term play, what are these companies going through. We have to look at the prospectuses and annual reports and stuff. And then immediately 75% of the people say, forget about it, I'm not going to even bother, I'll just go to the pub or go out and do something else. So it is one of those things where, how do you emphasize these core concepts without having that knowledge? And I say the same thing, just focus on stuff that you already have a passion for and you have a knowledge of, whatever you're interested in, and go from there. Because then you already are ahead of the game, and it's something, again, win or lose, you're going to enjoy doing.
All right then, Lee.
I hope that answered your question.
I'm sure it does in many ways, and raises many more questions. Yeah. But so Lee, let's go right back. I'm picking up the book. I want to never go broke. That's absolutely a surefire thing. I don't. How do I get started?
Well, George, there's a few things you can do. And actually, I should point out right at the beginning here that this is not just good for your wallet, this part one of the book. It is a good for the environment as well. You know, there's two factors at play here. We are off the back of, you know, consumerism. You know, a lot of us buy items and then we don't dispose of items correctly that we've got around the home to refill it. So what I'm talking about here is, you know, how many of us are guilty for perhaps getting a skip, for example, and just throwing it all in because we go, oh, I just can't be hassle. You know, it's just hassle getting rid of all of this stuff in a way where I'm going to make money, or we go and take it to the tip, or you just slowly drip feed it into your bin and it goes into landfill. You know, all of those kind of things, especially in this day and age, just it feels like, you know, more could be done. And we want to kind of make people think more about the items that they own in their home and what they can do with this, right? So a big example of that would be something like clothes, you know, and, you know, you might go to something like one of those recycle bins, you know, the big recycle bins that you get in the supermarket car park, you bin it all, you bag it, throw it in the bin. Now, some of that might be goods that you think have no value, but people will put in high street retailer clothes, or will put in even designer clothes because they just think, don't know, just get rid of it. Just need a wardrobe clear out. I've got new stuff. Let's get rid of it. Now, what we're talking about in this first part of the book is, A, thinking about your household net wealth. Now, what I mean by that is basically totting up how much value you have around the home, things like multimedia. How many of us have DVDs, CDs, old video games, books that are just floating around in the garage, in the loft, on bookcases, never to be read, watched, or listened to ever again? You know, we're in an age now where we stream, we listen to music, streaming, we watch videos streaming. We don't want the clutter. So people just kind of throw it away, and then it ends up inevitably just getting binned off. What we suggest in this book, for example, is not just downloading one barcode app. So a lot of people will be familiar with barcode apps, something like Music Magpie. You download it, you scan a book, a CD, a DVD, you get an instant value for it. They send out a free postage box, you send it away, and they give you a couple of quid for it. It's nothing huge. However, if you've got quite a lot of it, what we recommend to do is to download three apps. Now, people might not think to do that, and there is more than one. There's quite a few knocking around. We Buy Books, Zifit, just to mention two others. You might get a real price variation on all the apps. So you want to maximize. Let's say you've got 200 pieces of multimedia. App A pays out the best price 125 times. App B, 50 times. You see what I'm saying? It's kind of like, you want to make sure you're maximizing the price for it. Okay, so you've cleared the house out. Now, later on in the book, we talk about bread and butter items and we talk about niche items. Now, bread and butter items, for example, a car boot or a charity shop will be multimedia. And you should have no qualms about going in with your barcode app and looking for things at charity shops and car boots that are going to turn profit on what you're buying. Now, people might poo-poo that and think, oh, but I tell you what, if you know what you're looking for, special edition Blu-rays, academic books, there's lots of stuff out there that's floating around that you can buy for nothing that you can then flip onto these apps. And if you've got more than one of them, you're going to maximize your chances of getting even more money. So that's kind of just like one of the small concepts that we have in this part one of the book. Another thing to do, which Jesse and I say, boring, long, cold weekends are perfect for this. You know, you pick a room, you pick a few items, you get post-it notes, you put on the price and what you think it's worth. Then you go and look it up and see how much you could actually get for it. And then after a while, you can start replicating this elsewhere, not just in your own home, wherever you go, whether that is an auction, whether that is a charity shop, whether that is a car boot. You can kind of visualize whether or not you're going to make money on these certain items. And the other core thing to remember in this part one of the book as well, and again, I'm talking about things yourself around the home, is making sure that you put things in the correct tier. So we talk about four tiers here. So your tier one items go to like antique stores, or they go somewhere sort of a bit highbrow. Tier two would be sort of online and specialist online places. Tier three might be things like car boots, where you know that you can sell this stuff en masse and get rid of it. And four is sort of like your scrap price. So your scrap metal, scrap clothes. You can still, even if your clothes are from designers from shops that people probably don't want to buy secondhand clothes from, you can still just go and take them to these recycle centers. They don't pay huge amounts of money, but you're still getting money nonetheless. There's loads of other concepts in that part one, George. You're not just about your home, you know, making money online safely and securely, for example, doing things like surveys, renting your driveway out, for example. Mm-hmm. There's loads of ways that you can make money from your armchair.
I'm going to bring Simon in. Simon, have you ever done any of these things that Lee's talking about?
No, and this is the reason why I would recommend that people buy Lee and Jesse's book, is because basically there's two issues going on. One, I'm lazy. And two, I think about these things and I think, well, I want all my stuff. I've got a huge record collection. I've got loads of CDs. I've got lots of books. I want them. They're mine. I don't want to sell them. You know, I actually like having physical copies of stuff. I recognize that many other people have completely ditched theirs. Having said that, I may be guilty of having some boxes of CDs and some boxes of records that are basically just in the back of a cupboard that I'm never going to listen to. Some absolute rubbish that I used to buy in when the record shop when I was growing up had the reduced 50p 12-inch singles. And it was like, well, I'll have that, see what that's like. The hit rate on that stuff was fairly low. Maybe 30% of it was good, 70% of it was absolute rubbish. I could probably get rid of that, although I do question who would want it. But more to the point, I think the important thing is that it kind of reframes the way you think about it and inspires you. Because when I was reading the book, I was thinking, well, actually, now that I come to think about it, I probably do have quite a lot of stuff that I don't actually want or is just sitting there gathering dust? And I was thinking about the fact that there was the bit on computer games and computer consoles. Now, we were a Sega family growing up, so I had a Master System, first of all. My brother had a Mega Drive. Then we both had Game Gears. Now, I'm pretty sure that in my mum's loft is a Master System, a Mega Drive, a Game Gear. I know that I've got a Game Gear in a box somewhere in this house that I found in the loft and thought, ooh, I'll find a charger for that or some batteries and I'll plug in a game and have a go. Unfortunately, I could only find one game. But I know that if I search through the loft, there's all those things. Mm-hmm. Now, I would much prefer that instead of sitting there in the loft doing nothing or me taking them down to the tip and throwing them away, that they went to someone who is really, really into computer games and old school games consoles, who's actually going to love them and play them and enjoy them. And if I could get a bit of money into the bargain, well, that to me is great, because there's a number of things going on there. A, I get a bit of money. B, someone else gets some enjoyment out of them. And C, it's considerably better for the environment. And so I think there's things like that where if you think about them, you think, well, hang on a minute, actually, I do have some stuff and maybe I could do that with it. And to just to go back to another thing, everything has some value to some people. And that's, I think, what you have to think about. And I went down to the tip the other day to help my brother throw a washing machine away. And when we took it round the back of the skip, there was an old bike in there. And it was an old 1980s mountain bike, a Peugeot one. It was in a sort of day glow pink and yellow colour. And I spotted it and said to my brother, that's pretty cool. He said, well, ask them, you could probably take it. And the guy came round while we were looking at it. And he said, I'm sorry, you can't take that. Now that it's gone in the skip, you can't take it. Which I thought was really disappointing. I said, really? He said, yeah, we couldn't take it if we wanted to. You can't take it. I mean, there was no point. I'm not going to argue it with the poor guy who works down the tip, who has to listen to people arguing stuff with him all day long. But I thought it's such a shame, because that bike, somebody has found it in their garage or their shed and gone, it's worthless to me. I'm putting it in a skip. The frame of that bike is worth at least £100 to some Dalston hipster who would turn it into their new single speed fixed gear ride. And in fact, actually, if you took that bike and you stripped all the rusty components off it and just put the frame on eBay, you'd probably get £100. And I thought that's such a shame, because somebody would love that. That word actually, somebody would, once that bike was fixed up and probably sold on for £250, £300 with some new components on it, somebody would love it. It would be their pride and joy. And I thought, I really hope that that doesn't end up in landfill. So, you know, there's a positive and environmental aspect to it as well.
Jesse, Simon's raised some really good points there. I mean, one is how do you find the people that want your stuff? I think, how do we find those Dalston hipsters? But the big one for me is the procrastination, is lazy, and is the emotional connection. I've been racking my brains thinking about all the things that I've got somewhere. And this somewhere is, you know, original Star Wars figures, a 1972 tankard from the Munich Games. I mean, this is stuff that's great, but it's somewhere. You know, someone would really want that stuff. I'm not saying I don't want my original Star Wars figures, but really I'm doing nothing with them. So how do you break that kind of emotional connection to stuff?
It's a tough one, because the thing is that we also emphasize is that it's not just about making money. It's about enjoying the process. So people always ask me, like, oh, well, you've bought and sold everything. What do you collect? I collect money and memories. I don't have a lot of money right now, so it's just memories. But it's one of those things where I emphasize to people, don't just think about the dollar. The dollars and the pound is secondary. It's when you bought, when you're buying something, you identify something. It's like what Simon just said about that story of, oh my gosh, you could turn into something amazing. And the value aspect came secondary. It's worth at least £100, but the, oh, you could turn it into this fixed, amazing bike. It's so awesome. So it's the mentality of the value of something. It doesn't, if it's not the what is the value to you, what is the value to someone else? And I pose the question to you, what is the value to you, Georgie, of being able to on match day go out into the pitch, shake hands, run out and get the game ball to a South End game? What would you pay for that?
The South End game, really?
Yeah,
I mean, they wouldn't pay me for that.
Right. Now, Lee, What would you pay for that? What would be the price that you would pay for that experience?
At the moment, mate, probably not an awful lot. If we were back in our heyday, mid-90s times, definitely a good few £100.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the same kind of mentality. And I use the same, you know, if there's visual representation, is if I were to meet this one Slovenian kid, who just looks, if you looked him up, he'd be a goofball. His name's Andrzej Kopitar. If I asked you guys, all of you, how much you'd pay to meet him, you'd probably say, I have no idea who that person is. And then you ask me, I'd say I'd probably pay £1,000, £2,000. Why? It's because he's the captain of the Los Angeles Kings, who's one of the greatest hockey players that played for our team. And being able to get an autographed jersey from him would be priceless to me. But so I hope you can see the kind of example that I'm giving of what is that value to each person's circumstance, whether it's a regional aspect or whether it's a personal hobby kind of aspect. To it kind of removes the idea of, you got to not think about what does this mean and what is the value to me, more so than saying, what is this potentially the value of to somebody else? And when you start identifying that and you kind of come up with that hybrid of value to me, value to someone else, it makes things a lot easier for decision-making to say that could be worth something, irrelevant of what I personally think about it. So that's kind of the approach that you need to take in a lot of those circumstances.
I'm going to throw in my 2 pence worth into the hat here to encourage you to get rid of those Star Wars figures. Firstly, I would say you can have a look around. You know, the internet is just a vast expanse of information, and you can get quite accurate prices for items like that, whether that's on eBay selling prices, whether that's a specialist auction house. You know, especially during COVID the last year, you know, a lot of auction houses have had to go online. You know, simply because they couldn't run auctions in-house. You couldn't go in, you know, because of restrictions. So you can easily get that kind of information at your fingertips. The other thing that I would also say to encourage people who, you know, we're not asking people to sell items that they clearly have an attachment with, that they're going to regret getting rid of. We're talking more here about your mass multimedia. We're talking about your old clothes that you don't want anymore. We're talking about old bulky furniture that you look at, and instead of stripping that down and taking that down to the tip, you're looking at that and going, how can I give that to a little bit of tender loving care, polish it up a little bit and sell it for £20, £50, £100. Easy places. We're in a world now where you can literally within 2 minutes go on Facebook Marketplace and put up an item of furniture that's worthless to you, but for someone else, a cheap piece of furniture that they could either upcycle or fits perfectly into a room that they want and they don't want to spend huge amounts of money. You know, the market is there for it, and it's easy. And the last thing I would say is that the whole idea of this first part is to have a segregated account. Now, it's very easy to sell items to get rid of stuff, and then it just getting sucked into your daily life expenses. You know, it just gets sucked into the bills, or you go and spend it on the pub, or, you know, I'm not saying that's not the right thing to do, but the whole idea of this is to almost make it a bit more like a fun hobby, or just a way to keep thinking about how are you going to make this pot of cash keep going on an upward cycle. So you put it into a segregated account, you're valuing it, you're doing something with it. Okay, this is not, as we said, it's not investment, it's not a pension, it's not a savings account. This is a pot of cash where it's almost like you're looking at that pot of cash and then going, how can I reinvest this money that I've made from my home, risk-free, from nowhere, stuff that was going to end up in a skip, a tip, wherever, and then going, do you know what? I've made £100. I'm going to go and spend this £100 at the car boot. I'm going to spend this £100 at a charity shop or wherever, and make that into £200 into that segregated pot of cash, and rinse and repeat and rinse and repeat and keep doing that. And that is the core concepts that we have in the book. You know, it's giving you the kind of knowledge and ways of doing it and the encouragement.
You make me feel guilty. The other half came home the other day with a pub bench that he got for free off Facebook, and he stole a pallet as well, with the view that he would, you know, buff them up and that would be garden furniture for you. It's brilliant though, because it goes to what Jesse says, as long as you enjoy the process, doesn't really matter. It was free. I was like, what on earth is this? Like, we've got no space for a pub bench. But there were some strangers outside enjoying it the other day. So there you go. Look, it's a community thing now.
Exactly. And there's loads of examples of that. You know, a free bench has been listed on Facebook. I mean, that's, to me, sounds like gold dust. We're in a, you know, in a time where pub gardens have just reopened, and there seems to be loads of pubs that have got a shortage of furniture that could probably do with it.
You didn't steal right? that one, I'd like to point out. Didn't
and if you've that. Got a little bit, if you've got a little bit of like know-how, even just a tiny little bit, and even if you don't, YouTube tutorial, how to fix a pub bench, right? Pretty easy, probably needs a few more screws. You give it a little sand down, you get some, £10 pot of, wood paint, clean, you know, give it, maybe do it an outrageous color or do something that's a bit unique. Give it a go, paint it up, and you've added value to it. That's now a 40 quid pub bench that you can have some enjoyment with in the summer. And then perhaps you have the views to sell it on at another point when you don't
want to. You paint that some kind of deep pastel blue color, it's worth 30 quid.
Exactly. I mean,
of course, there is the other way around where you discover that something you own is actually worth more to you than it is to anyone else. I was in a conversation the other day. I sat with a bunch of old friends. My friend pulled out his old 1992 Wembley Stadium Guns N' Roses ticket. And he's like, see, this must be worth some money. These must be pretty rare. I reckon I could get loads of money for this. And I did say to him, well, it's not that rare because I've got one as well. And he looked on eBay. And it was worth £25, which is great, actually, for an old piece of... it's not bad for an old piece of paper, but he went, it's worth £25. He's like, I was like, yeah, it's worth more than £25 to you, isn't it? And he's like, yeah, I'm not selling that, ever.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, Simon, because you're on the right track. You're talking about the Sega stuff, and you're even talking about the Guns N' Roses stuff. It's like... yeah, maybe that ticket stub isn't worth that much money. But if you got the original tour shirt from Guns N' Roses, some of these tour shirts, like we have, my wife is into vintage clothes and she has some original Iron Maiden shirts. And they're just, they got holes in them. They're like old, you know, worn down, like they've gone through the washer and the dryer 100 times over. They sell for like $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, you know? And so the other thing that me and Lee try to emphasize is, you can also, it's not just about getting like, oh, here's 3 quid, here's 5 quid, here's 10 quid. It's, you may have something that may be worth a ton of money that you had no idea. I mean, even going off, and don't ask me why I know this on the top of my head, Sega, they just had a video game auction, a sealed Sonic the Hedgehog for the Genesis, Mega Drive, if you will, sold for $20,000. So the idea is, again, and we talk about this a lot with like Pokemon cards, even Star Wars stuff, is that if you have this particular one, it could be worth 5 extra quid in your pocket. It could be worth 25,000 extra quid on your in your pocket, depending. So it's, again, even more so a gross exponential example of don't be so easy to throw stuff away, because you could have a rare version of that item and it could be life-changing money. So it's not going to happen all the time, but you don't want to lose that opportunity just for a little due diligence of going to these sites, like Lee says, checking eBay, et cetera, et cetera.
Jesse, give us some of the wins that either were the big wins or the ones that just made you think, yeah, really good.
The thing is like, I don't think about total profit, like in terms of how much money I made, more so than exactly what you're asking is what made me proud and what was the purpose. I'm so gung-ho about teaching people how to make money. And seeing them be successful on the information I'm giving them is worth so much more to me than what I've made personally. My gardener asked me one day, can you teach me how to make money? Like, you come along with me to the car boot, I'll show you everything I know. It's like, I'm there. When's the next time? I was tomorrow, 6 a.m. I'm there. Showed up, ready to go. And he was just a sponge of soaking in all this information about how to, the ins and the outs of the car boot. And then finally, I'm like, I'm going to Vegas. But what I do when I go to Vegas is I'll go to hit up some antique shops and some thrift stores to compensate for all my gambling losses. He's like, I'm coming. I'll book the hotel. I'm coming. So we went. He's like, I love this taxidermy raccoon. I'm like, go over there and haggle and see if they'll take 50% off for it. He goes, okay. Goes in, does it. He's like, got it. How much you sell for? All right, how much did you buy it for? $99. I'm like, good deal. He's like, can I put it in the antique store? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. How much should I put it for? $500. He's like, are you kidding me right now? I'm like, yeah, put it for $500. It was there for an hour and sold $500. He's like, this is amazing. I'm taking all $500 and I'm buying 500 more items. And he's just been going and going and going. And he's done it now for just over 6 months. And he's made over $10,000 just starting off with one stuffed raccoon. And so it's moments like that where I'm just like, this is totally worth it for me. Because you get little nuggets of information, you pocket it, and then you rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. It's not always raccoons and dead animals, but it's that same mentality of that perception of what something is worth and trying to find the buyer who's willing to pay those amounts. That's what I look out for, is seeing other people being successful. And I guess that's the biggest reason why I love writing this book with Lee. Because it's basically the embodiment of that concept.
And let me chip in here, Georgie, because Jesse's obviously being quite modest here. And I know what he means. It is hard talking about yourself. It is hard selling yourself. It is like a job interview. But some of the things that, you know, Jesse told me about, and I touched on it there earlier, the $42,000 container, for example, a large part of that win was that it was full of vintage cameras, for example, right? So, you know, Jesse wasn't too sure. He kind of had an inkling there might be cameras in there. Jesse then goes and researches each one of those cameras, whether it's a Leica, a Kodak, or whatever make it is, finds out they're vintage. Now, when Jesse goes to a car boot or wherever he is, he knows what cameras to look out for. They almost sort of like ping at him because he knows the value because of what's happened before. And it's all about, you know, remembering, you know, it's almost like being a resale elephant, like remembering some of these things that you've done in the past that you can then go forward and do again. And there's loads of other examples of that. So, you know, Jesse was telling me about how he's bought almost 100 boom boxes in recent years. Now, boom boxes are, you know, have cassette decks, they're chunky old things, have a handle, take massive batteries. People, you know, for a long time, just old 1980s, early 90s stuff that people just don't care about. But of course, there's been a bit of a retro revival, and Jesse knows exactly which boom boxes to go and look for, and he calls them his niche items. So, you know, we teach people in this book, or tell people in this book, to find their own niche, and boom boxes, for example, are one for Jesse. He's made a tenfold return on some of that stuff. And a couple of other stories I really like. He saw on Facebook that there was going to be a garage sale. Now, we don't have many garage sales in Britain, but they're still, you know, people do sell things on their driveway and stuff. They're a bit more of a thing in America. And Jesse had seen on this Facebook group there was a picture, I think, of a Budweiser sign that Jesse liked the look of. So he messaged the guy directly, said, can I come and pick this up tonight, you know, rather than waiting tomorrow when the sale was on. And the guy was like, yeah, if you come over in the next hour. Fast forward, Jesse gets around there, makes friends with the guy. It turns out that this guy's mum was one of the first Coca-Cola salespeople and had a massive thing for Disney and had collected all sorts of Disney items ranging from, you know, the 1920s onwards, unique pieces, things that, you know, just incredible. So Jesse tells me he did a kind of relatively long haggling process with this guy, had a few drinks, you know, and he ended up buying all these items just verbatim for $10,000. You know, this is quite high-end stuff. This is like if you're in professional resale. This is not if you're just first starting out. But from that, you know, he reckons he's turned around about $50,000 on that. You know, and he's had Disney approach him directly for some of those items because they were so rare. Even things like old maps of Disney World, you know, first maps that were out there. And the last one I'm going to tell you about, because I just think it's so funny. Jesse said to me he was at Santa Barbara Zoo. And he was just, you know, just there on a day out, and he bumped into someone he knew, like a staff member there, and it transpired that they were selling a carousel. There was a new lion enclosure going up, and lions and kids don't really mix, and they needed to get rid of this carousel. So Jesse said, you know, where's the manager? You know, I'll make an offer on it. I'll give you $500 for it. What else are you kind of going to do with it? You're just sort of scrapping it. Now, Jesse bit off a little bit more than he could chew that one, because they said yes, if he could take it that day, and he had to dismantle this carousel, take it away. And I think it was in your garden for a good few months, wasn't it, Jesse? And he listed it on eBay for something like, I don't know, $15,000, $20,000. It was something like that, wasn't it? And every kind of week he was getting fed up with this carousel being like in his home, and he was just shaving off $1,000 sort of every week until it kind of sold. And it went for $7,000 in the end. So it was a nice... Yeah. Profit, but again, it's all about valuing your time and knowing, you know, basically not biting off more than you can chew. It's all right for Jesse because he's a professional, but again, if you're first starting out, I wouldn't recommend buying a carousel from a zoo.
See, but it's also a part of the adventure that I love. It's not about the money making per se, you know. So whether it's that, last week I did a road trip to Minnesota to drop off some Bob Dylan art to a dealer in Minneapolis. Drove right back. It doesn't matter what it is.
And Jesse says that like it's going up the road. Was it, Jesse? It was about a 54-hour round trip, wasn't it? Or something mad like that.
Yeah, something like, I mean, you got to go through about 7 states. Minnesota's in the middle. I'm in Los Angeles, so. But it was fun, you know, you get to sit in a minivan for 56 hours. It's not that big of a deal. Part of the fun, you pick up a couple shot glasses and mugs from different states that you stop at, that you fill up at the petrol station, if you will. So, you know, it's part of the experience, part of the fun.
As I was about to say, it makes a good story, if nothing else.
Exactly.
Billy, where's the best places to sell this? You said, look, if you're going to go on one of these Music Magpie things, pick 3, or, you know, Jesse's Gardener, I assume, was putting that stuffed rodent into your antique shop. I mean, I don't know anyone who's an antique. Where do you go, especially in this current time of lockdowns and all sorts? Can you still do it?
Well, it depends what your item is, Georgie. I mean, and your market. I mean, these events are back on now. Last weekend, I went to a car boot sale. I went to an antique centre. Charity shops are open again. All of these places are back open, so you can do all of this kind of stuff. But it all depends on your item. If you've got a high end, let's take clothes again for an example. If you've got a designer piece of clothing, you want to make sure you get it on a specialist website like Depop or ASOS Marketplace or somewhere where people, you know, want to. Or even eBay, who will look for these kind of items. You know, you say, well, you don't know anyone with an antique shop. You know, I live 5-10 minutes away from a place called Battlesbridge Antique Centre. It's a huge place. If you've got an old piece of furniture, you can take it there and you're likely to get someone buy it off you because they'll upcycle it, give it that, you know, that bit of TLC that you might not be able to give it and sell it for a profit. And in the book, we talk about where to, you know, we've got lots of resources in the book, where you can head to do all of this kind of stuff properly and where you can sell it properly. I think the idea is, as long as you sell it rather than just bin it, that's kind of the message.
All right, then. Part 3, investing the pot for resale profits. That's what we want, Lee.
Yeah, this is great, Joy. I absolutely love this bit of the book. It's a kind of a feast for the senses, if you will. You know, we're now telling you where you've had that pot run of cash, you know, you built up that pot. It's all about going to the events, going to the things, getting really stuck in and targeting items to buy and flip for a profit. And we're talking about here, as we've said in this program, charity shops, car boots, specialty auctions, online auctions, eBay, you know, wherever you can get to these events is where there is money to be made. And actually, that's what I'm trying to say in that part 2 of the blueprint, is taking that blueprint and using it in part 3 and going around and finding it. And as we go on in this book, Georgie, and as we say quite a lot, you know, we're not saying that you're going to go, you know, antiques roadshow styly, rock up, find an antique, you know, statue that you've bought for £10 at a car boot that's then worth £1 million. You know, those sort of stories do happen, but they are, you know, rarer than hen's teeth. You know, it's not like something that just happens day to day, and that's not what we're trying to sort of say. It's not like Jesse's telling you to go and hunt down this particular item somewhere. It's more about chipping away and building up that cash pot kind of organically, not thinking that cash pot's just going to go, you know, up like a rocket. It's more like you're steadily building it by buying and selling the stuff, and it's fun. It is good fun.
Can I just make a point as well from the financial investment, you know, element here of the gang? If you buy something for 40 quid and you sell it for 50 quid, you've made a 25% return. You would be very lucky to make a 25% return on any investment that you make over the course of one whole year. So if you can make 25% on something in a relatively small amount of time, now obviously it's going to be a lot harder once you start talking about larger sums. But if you do quite a few of those and enough of those, and you don't burn up too much of the value of your time doing it, then you're actually making returns that are very comparable with the best returns that you could possibly make from investing.
You make such a good point there, Simon, because you actually, when you start getting into like super high-end stuff, it actually is identical to buying and selling a 5 quid item and selling it for 10, 20 quid, or, you know, 40 to 50, is when you buy something for 4 grand and sell it for 5 grand, or 400,000 and sell it for 500,000. the core concepts are identical. They're literally identical. They're just more zeros at the end. So the idea is that for us, we're creating this framework for a lot of people to approach it from the most simplistic manner as possible, but you still have the ability and the skill to take it as far as you can. I mean, it is theoretically possible to become a millionaire from these core concepts, depending on how much effort you want to put in. But you're, again, totally correct, is that you can actually make these serious gains when you start moving on from cleaning coins to flipping Ferraris. Because I do know those guys that do that kind of stuff, that identify value in that kind of big time stuff and the potential gains. And that's why I'm like, it's good to have your pension and have your investments, but you can make some serious cash if you're going out and identifying value that no one else sees. That's the big thing for me. So,
all right, then, before we wrap up, I want to know firstly, Jesse, I mentioned it earlier, but there's going to be a legion of podcast listeners ready to get out there and get going. Give us some LA pep talk.
Buy the book, read it, and then go on Zifit, go on We Buy Books, go on Music Magpie and sell it and make a little bit of your money back. That's what I think. We stay true to it. So harness the information, get as much out of it as you can, and then sell it to someone else. That's like proof is in the pudding, if you will. And then if you don't make any more money after that, give me a call and I'll top you up and get you back your £7.50 or £2.50, whatever is left over in that balance that you owe. But that's really what it comes down to. Wherever you are in your home, look, take a look around, scan it into some of these apps, look up on eBay the stuff that you already have, bank that money, and then use it to see what other opportunities are out there. I promise there's plenty of opportunity out there, and there's a lot of money to be made. And no knowledge, no requirements, no degree necessary. Just go out there, put in that little effort. I promise you, you will win.
I'm going to give you 5 really quick fire tips, Georgie, to get out there and do this. Firstly, make it part of your day. Rather than watching another episode or, you know, binge watching something on Netflix, or if you are watching Netflix or TV, try and make money while you're doing it. You know, scan these items, list a designer piece of clothing. You know, just make it part of your day. I think it is a good tip. I also think that basically, if you sell something from your home and you feel that buzz of the sale, I think you then start thinking about doing it bigger and better, and then you realize how good that's going to feel. It's quite another good way to think about it. And then if you do realize that you're good at it, haggling and sniffing out niche items and starting your own little sort of mini resale empire, you realize that it's actually quite a bit of fun. You know, you're making money and it's a bit of fun. And don't set unrealistic goals. So, you know, is what I was touching on there. You know, don't think you're going to find some £1 million vase from the Ming Dynasty or whatever it is. You know, you're looking for these little wins that steadily gain in time. As Simon says, you know, 25% return, lovely stuff. You know, and if you can keep rinse, repeat and doing that, it's great. And I think the last one is think about it, making money this way, like going to the gym. You know, you were talking earlier about maybe being lazy and just thinking, oh, you know, is this all to make a few quid? What's the point? But you'll feel better for doing it. I think you'll feel happier for doing it. And even if you think, oh, it's not worth just getting that extra few quid, think about it. It's better than it going to landfill. It's better than it losing even more value and it not working out. And I think the key is having that pot of cash separate and then using it for the resale game. Think how cool it will be to have that pot of cash and your hobby is making money. I think it's a cool way to think about it.
All right, then. Lee Boyce, Jesse McClure, Never Go Broke, How to Make Money Out of Just About Anything. Simon Lambert, thank you very much. You can keep up to date with the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. If you have any comments or questions with the team, anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. And if you've got any great stories of how you once bought something and then sold it to make a really nice little profit, please send them in, mark them for Lee's attention, and we'll take a look and we'll go through some of the best ones. You can tweet us at thisismoney, where you can also tell us those stories, but you are severely limited by the character count. Or you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast and find all the episodes of the podcast past and join in the debate in reader comments. And I guess think like an entrepreneur. Not everybody's going to start a business, but you could all probably make a bit of money from the stuff knocking around your house.
You can indeed. And Jesse, if we want to find out more about you, what are you up to?
You can send a carrier pigeon to Los Angeles. You can find me on Twitter, I guess. I don't know what my handle is. I think it's my name, Jesse McClure. Or just find me on the street, buy me a beer, and I'll talk to you about whatever you'd like. I'll be in the UK all next year and down in London, up in Accrington, all over the place. So come find me and we'll have a chat and a pint.
And Greg's in Stevenage, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.